And welcome back to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have from the National Constitution Center, we have the manager of exhibition development, Sarah Winsky, and we have exhibition developer, Elena Popchuk. And we are going to be talking about the new permanent installation, Civil War and Reconstruction. And ladies, let's start off this conversation with, how about first the overview of what is the National Constitution Center?
So we are a museum located on Independence Mall right here in Philadelphia. So when you go down and see the Liberty Bell and Independence Hall, we're right on the mall right there. We're the only nonpartisan, nonprofit institution in the country dedicated to educating the American public, we the people, about our founding document, about the U.S. Constitution. And we do that through three main ways. Like I said, we're the Museum of We the People, so you can come see us and our exhibits, which we're going to talk about our newest one today. But we also are a civic education center, so we do a ton of things in person and online with teacher education, lesson plan, interactive tools, teacher professional development, so reaching teachers and students very, very actively. And also we're America's Town Hall, so we do tons and tons of extra programming from our blog to our podcast to our evening events or daytime events where we have special speakers come in and panel discussions. So again, anything you could want to know about what's going on in the country, the history behind it, how we got here, about the Constitution and the rule of law, you can come to us to find it.
And of course, it's accessible. It's for the person who has the highest degree in law and constitutional law to the grade school kid or someone who's never actually taken a class in civics.
We absolutely hope so. I mean, I think also we see ourselves as helping the American people get access to those great thinkers and scholars in the country and having you be able to interact with them in different ways, whether you come to a program or you're listening to them on one of our podcast or you're seeing the results of their work in one of our exhibitions. So again, you can understand better history, the Constitution itself, and what's going on today.
You have great permanent collections and great exhibits that are always up there. But today we're going to talk about the latest one, Civil War and Reconstruction. And it's called The Battle for Freedom and Equality. And in your own references to it, you refer to it as the heart of the Second Founding, that the Reconstruction Amendments, because this exhibit is looking at 13, 14, and 15. So, Elena, you're in the hot seat now. Let's get started talking about how did this exhibit come to actually be?
You set it up very nicely there of this battle for freedom and equality that culminates in the Reconstruction Amendments, but we really cover a lot of ground from the signing of the Constitution in 1787 all the way through the end of Reconstruction, which is 1877. But this exhibit, the initial impetus to have an exhibit about the Civil War and Reconstruction started with a partnership with the formerly Civil War Museum of Philadelphia that moved its collection to Gettysburg to be looked at and taken care of by the Gettysburg Foundation. And in part, some of the artifacts went to the Union League of Philadelphia. So we had a partnership to bring some of those artifacts back to be on display in Philadelphia. So that started where we knew we would have a Civil War exhibit, and then we broadened the topic to really get visitors to understand why we needed a Civil War. And ultimately, we are now in the 150th anniversaries of the Reconstruction Amendments. So we broadened to really cover that full story from the founding all the way through the end of Reconstruction.
Let's define Reconstruction, because as before the show began, I was really surprised by this, but you had a great presentation with the historian Lewis Henry Gates.
Henry Lewis Gates.
With Henry Lewis Gates. And he asked the crowd, well, how many of you studied Reconstruction in school? And I raised my hand. I'd studied it. And the lady behind me actually leaned forward and asked, what is Reconstruction? And I was surprised. I really was surprised. But then I thought, well, I'm not much brighter than she is, because I didn't realize that you set a finite date that it ended. I thought that it – I didn't realize that you could say that this was a finite period. So hop in there and wrestle all of that to the ground.
Yes. So I'll start with the term itself, because Reconstruction certainly implies that that era was just about the states – coming back into the Union after the Civil War. So the Union actually reconstructing and coming back together and forming. So that's challenging because that is one tiny part of what ultimately Reconstruction is about. But there is that term of reconstructing, going back to what it was. But there's so much to unpack with Reconstruction that it really is a period where a group of people who had ideas floating around from the anti-slavery movement that really end up culminating during the Reconstruction era after the war as this opportunity to finally write the promise of the Declaration that all men are created equal, and actually placing that into the Constitution and passing the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments that guarantee such ideals as freedom, equality, citizenship, voting rights. So that is not a Reconstruction, because it's not going back, it's not reverting back to something that was. It's completely transforming. So it's inherently challenging with the name itself. And a note about the date, this was actually something that we really struggled with, was what we would count as that end date, because it really is ongoing. It's an ongoing battle for freedom and equality that traditionally, with 1877 is when the last federal troops are removed from the South that were overseeing the transformation with changes in the economy, in the state governments. So when the last federal troops are removed by 1877, then you have a different period coming in, and then ultimately leading to Jim Crow. So it in that way is why we chose it, but a lot of historians now are certainly questioning when that endpoint actually happens. We were going to go with 1901 at one point, that the last black office holder in the South left federal office. So we could have ended it there. That's really that promise of the 15th Amendment with voting rights and African Americans holding office in the South for the first time. We could have ended it there. So, and there are plenty of other cases with Supreme Court cases that are whittling away at the rights that are guaranteed by each of the amendments that we could have had that cutoff point. So we went for the more traditional that people generally learn as 1877. And then we do carry the story onward and actually into the civil rights movement with the end of the exhibit. We have a video to help visitors bridge that gap. But it's very challenging for ending dates, names, all of that.
Again, the importance of bringing this to the museum is showing how the Constitution affected everything from pre-Civil War state rights into the Reconstruction period, and then the after effects of it. And it started with, I think, mm-hmm. your last exhibit, where you had the original sheets from, was it Marshall? And it talks about the selection of we the people, or was it, you know, how he defined that term, just people, mm-hmm. to try and include everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's actually where we have this exhibit in the museum is right next to the gallery you're just speaking of, where we have some copies of the drafts of the Constitution on display. So I think for us, it was really about, it's a period of time that some scholars call the Second Founding. So it's thinking about the kind of the original founding with the writing of the Constitution, and then how the Constitution gets transformed with these three amendments. And I think even though this is a period of history we've always covered, we've always had exhibits about this topic up in our main exhibition gallery, but it was the idea of we wanted to create a centralized place on the main floor of our museum where this is kind of really a crucible moment for America. I think you can understand a lot of what happened before and what happens after by looking at it through the lens of this period. So we're just hoping that this, for a period that is misunderstood sometimes or not completely taught at school, that you can really immerse yourselves in this. And whether it's the first thing you see when you get here, or it's the second thing or third thing you see when you get to the center, it is either adding on to, it's creating a good foundation for you to see other parts of the museum, or it's letting you take a deep dive once you've seen broader context in other parts of our museum.
It is an amazing exhibit. And it showed me so much that I hadn't realized about that era. And I hadn't realized, you alluded to this when you mentioned black voters and office holders. And then so you have this period where they're exercising their rights, men The men are exercising their rights in ridiculously wonderful numbers, especially when you compare the numbers of people coming out to claim their rights that they had finally attained to today when you have 20% of the population showing up for an election. Maybe you go, oh, wow, 30% of the population showed up for this vote. And we go, wow, that was a good one. And the numbers that came out and actually served in state and federal and local offices following these amendments then ending in 1901.
There's such a beautiful moment during Reconstruction where there is such promise of people exercising their rights as citizens, being recognized as citizens for the first time, and ultimately with the 15th Amendment, exercising their right to vote. It really is such promise in that moment and really reminds you of how important those rights were for, particularly in that moment, for people who had been formerly enslaved a couple years prior and suddenly are now representing their communities or able to have a political voice of any kind with voting. But it lasts for such a short period of time. I'm reminded Henry Louis Gates, just, I never thought of Reconstruction just being 12 years. That is such a short period of time for how much is achieved, how transformative it is. And I learned, even working on this project, how amazing in 1867, that's 3 years before the 15th Amendment, that black men were able to vote in the South for the first time due to the Reconstruction Acts that Congress had passed in 1867. So one of my favorite artifacts in the exhibit is a ballot box that's made out of like a cardboard material and is marked for colored voters. And it's from a Virginia state election that black men were able to participate in 3 years before the amendment was passed. So people in the North not able to exercise their right to vote yet, but former slaves in the South being able to do so is just so beautiful. And it's important to have those moments to share to visitors because it is something that people are going to learn because it is simply not taught.
Gates, going back to him again, and so many of us know him through his shows, that Who Are You, the show where he takes the celebrities and he takes a statesman and he walks them through their family history. And he alluded to telling Chris Rock that his great-great-grandfather had been an office holder, had been a state office holder, and bringing him to tears because he had at one point said, I would like to go into politics. And his mom says, black men don't go into politics. Nobody's going to vote for you. You're never going to succeed in politics. And here his own great-great-grandfather had been in office.
And that people had forgotten. Like in his family, his own mother saying, you won't, black men just don't make it in politics. But there was that brief period in Reconstruction that's so beautiful that it was certainly, as Chris Rock found out, a thing that happened.
You know, and of course, if you would like to see this exhibit, it is Civil War and Reconstruction, the Battle for Freedom and Equality. And it is at the National Constitution Center now forever. It is a permanent addition. And if you'd like to know more information about it, the place to go always is constitutioncenter.org. You'll find out information about everything from visiting the Constitution Center to the exhibits that are on display, how to do it if you're a teacher or if you're a family coming in for the first time, constitutioncenter.org. My guest today from the National Constitution Center, the manager of exhibition development, Sarah Winsky, and exhibition developer, Elena Popchak. I'm Laura Lewis. You're listening to Our Delaware Valley. And one of the cool things that I always love about an exhibit at the National Constitution Center, you get into the different parties behind something. When it was the Prohibition, and you find out that the women's suffragettes were involved, and you had this party, and you had that party, and sometimes they were so completely opposite each other, but they had a common goal, and sometimes it was Machiavellian, but they would get together in support of something. And this brings to the table the same thing. Women's suffragettes, you had abolitionists, you had the South, you had manufacturers, etc. You had all these characters having a particular view of what they needed to accomplish in this period.
It's so important with every exhibit to really humanize it. And we wanted to bring to light those voices that have either been forgotten, overlooked, and pair them with people that we're more familiar with, like Abraham Lincoln, Frederick Douglass, but introduce people to Harriet Ann Jacobs, who in order to, she was enslaved in the South in order to escape assault by her master, she hid in a crawl space for 7 years and watched her children grow up. And she was there, but they didn't know it. And she was viewing them that that was somehow better than the enslaved system that she was in. Is just, it's hard to fathom. But introducing, I'm sure, you know, some people know about her, but having her featured in this exhibit and really help people understand the impact in the time, and that people that we don't remember today had such an impact at the moment and came together to create such momentous changes. Nothing was written at this time to have a roadmap to how we're going to get to the Emancipation Proclamation or the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. So are these people on the ground who are pushing for change, and it's such a diverse range of people who are pushing for freedom and equality for themselves and for other people is just such a great part of the story that can't be overlooked.
And you mentioned some of the artifacts, of course, came from the Civil War Museum, but then you had to create displays as well to exhibit or to explain the ideas and what propelled the constitutional amendments. So do you want to describe the actual exhibit, what you got, what are some of the really amazing artifacts that you happen to have, and then how do you tell the story around them?
I think the best way to go about that is talk about the exhibit development process, in that it starts, I mean, this project started over 2 years ago, but starting with what artifacts exist, what is out there, and what stories can we tell through actual things that exist from that time. And then from there, you build out, well, where are there gaps? You know, if something doesn't exist, we can produce a graphic with text on it, or an image that's evocative that captures a way to tell a story. And we build out from there, and always trying to think of a range of learners while we're considering what goes in an exhibit, and that some people are not as excited about artifacts as I happen to be, and that, you know, their eyes may glaze over when they see a block of text to read. So it's having producing interactives that are as small scale as an iPad up to a very large interactive that we developed for each of the amendments to showcase the drafting process, and has this magical presence about it that as you approach, it prompts you to touch a table that has a magical projection over the text of the amendment that you can then interact with physically, the text of each amendment, and figure out the events that shaped it, the people that shaped it, and ultimately how we ended up with the text that we did. So it, you know, very tactile moments that visitors can interact with. But just a few of the artifacts that are really exciting that we're featuring in the first section of the exhibit titled Building to Crisis, we have Dred Scott's petition for freedom. So this was his first petition that ultimately will lead a decade later to the infamous Supreme Court case where the court ruled that African Americans are not citizens, and that ultimately was an impetus leading to the Civil War and ultimately what would come with Reconstruction, with the passage of the 14th Amendment, which overturned the decision. So we have that original petition. We also have Frederick Douglass's pen and inkwell, which for someone who wrote quite a lot in his time and had much influence on that battle for freedom and equality, we are excited to showcase that. I mentioned the colored voters ballot box from 1867, which I'm amazed exists. We also have a carpet bag, which people I've witnessed in the exhibit are very excited to see in person. And then from the Civil War Museum of Philadelphia collection, a beautiful portrait of Abraham Lincoln painted by an African-American artist from Philadelphia, David Bastille Bowser. And he actually painted all of the painted and designed all of the flags for the U.S. colored troops during the Civil War. And we also have multiple items from General George Meade, including his eyeglasses, which are very human.
So, but also, speaking of flags, you've got a little chunk of another flag.
I'll let Sarah talk about
yes.
That.
Yes, that is one of my favorite things. So from the Civil War Museum of Philadelphia collection, there is a fragment of a flag that Abraham Lincoln raised over Independence Hall when he was coming through Philadelphia on his way to Washington, D.C. for his first inauguration. So this is a moment when a number of southern states had already seceded from the Union, and no one quite knew what was going to happen once he actually took office. So that he had this moment, he gave this very poignant speech, and it's just so great because it's an opportunity for us to connect to history that happened right where we stand, and we can point out the window and say this happened right here, which is so powerful to people. And that was one of the things I wanted to add is, even though we're saying this is a permanent gallery, for us, one of the things that changes a lot is the artifacts, because we aren't a collecting institution. We are reliant on great partners, like the partnership we created with the Civil War Museum and the Gettysburg Foundation, and lenders from across the country. There's over 20 different lenders, over 120, about 120 artifacts. Elena and our registrar went on trips to the South. They went to Louisiana and Virginia and places to look for these artifacts. So no matter when you come, if you come soon, if you come in a year from now or 2 years from now, you're going to always see new and interesting things. And I think it's such a great opportunity for people in Philadelphia to see things you would never see together in any other spot. So to have items that are so tangible with such a great local connection and a local history with items from archives in the South that haven't been mined or touched before, I think it's just such a great opportunity for visitors.
You touched on just now. Oh, no. We mentioned earlier Jim Crow. So after 1877, do you tell the story of the undoing of the efforts of the amendments from the South?
Yes. And we really start that story during Reconstruction because the roots are the backlash of all these transformative changes that are happening. That the formation of the KKK happens at this time, and other groups that are pushing up against this change and not willing to accept the new order and wanting to take back power, and introducing ideas such as the Lost Cause, which really is the pervasive myth that pushes forward into the 20th century, and ultimately leading to Jim Crow. But we really show the roots of those rights being whittled away during Reconstruction, and then ultimately at the highest level with the Supreme Court in some of its most infamous cases at the end of the 19th century, and then allows for the Jim Crow era to proliferate.
It's interesting that we always say that the victors write the history. You know, winners write the narrative of an event. And yet in the United States, the South seems to have the South that was defeated seems to be directing the narrative after Reconstruction.
I do wonder if Reconstruction lasting for only 12 years, if that has something to do with it, and the immediate backlash and ultimate taking back of power, because you end with 1877 is really most of the state governments in the South have changed hands politically, it back into the hands of ex-Confederates or former slaveholders. So the push being to return to the way that it was, and that Lost Cause idea being, well, we're going to produce imagery and propaganda and monuments that push people to think that life was better under slavery the way that it was. So being able to take hold of that and really spreading fear that, you know, going to the point of murdering people who tried to exercise their right to vote, that instilling so much fear in a significant portion of the population that then you are able to take the reins and tell the story. But it is interesting that it's not the victors in this case.
And because this is a permanent exhibit and because you guys are the headquarters for civic education and the town hall, there's always going to be programming now around this. And do we get that schedule at the website?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can always go to our calendar section to get the latest town hall events or teacher workshops we might be running or education area. There's always things coming out, either new videos or new podcasts. You can subscribe to our we have two different podcasts, one that creates original content and one that airs content from our town halls, like audio recordings from our town hall programs. You can find those on our YouTube channel. So yeah, there's going to be definitely ongoing events and programs tied around this. I know we're going to do a lot over the summer around just the Civil War era, as far as family groups and things coming down to the center. Yes, you can find all that online. And then the interactives, Elena was talking about the making of the Constitution and really digging into how each of these amendments were drafted and the context with which they were drafted and who was involved. Those are actually going to be going online in the fall with a relaunch of our interactive Constitution. So lots of ways you can experience the gallery in person, online, and continue to experience the story.
Premiering Juneteenth, which is a very important date in the African-American community celebrating emancipation. We will be premiering 14, which is a theatrical performance that will be in our Bank of America Theater in the main exhibit, We the People, at the Constitution Center. And it will be completely texts that exist woven together. There was no written text for this, but produced to capture the 14th Amendment and its relation to the Reconstruction era.
Ooh. And of course, this is a membership-driven organization. 2 minute warning here. This is a membership-driven organization as well. You don't get congressional funding or anything like that at all. This is a nonprofit.
Yeah, we are a private nonprofit, just like a lot of the other big museums you think of here in Philadelphia. So yes, we are very dependent on both our visitors who come and pay our admission tickets, and also people who come to programs and pay admission to those programs. And then also our members, you can find out information about that on the website. We have many levels of membership and different benefits you get from that. So we're always so appreciative of our members who let us keep doing this really great work.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's really quickly wrap up with where are you located, et cetera. Do the wrap up.
Yep. So again, we're on Independence Mall right downtown in Old City, Philadelphia. We're open every day except Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's Day. You can find us on our website. We're open most days, 9:30 to 5, except Sunday. We open at noon. And you can get tickets online on our website or call or come into our box office and get tickets. And we hope you come visit us. Again, you have many, many chances to come see this exhibit, but we hope you come soon and come again in the future as we'll be, you know, changing artifacts around and always looking for new little things we can include in the exhibit.
And, of course, everything that we talked about is available for you online at their website, which is constitutioncenter.org. Constitutioncenter.org for the videos, the YouTube links, the videos, the YouTube links, the teacher programming for someone who is going to bring a class to this, information about all of the town hall meetings, the lunchtime discussions that they have, the after work hours that they have, a lot of great programming, all found at constitutioncenter.org. And my guest today from the National Constitution Center, we had exhibition developer Elena Popchuk, and we had manager of exhibition development Sarah Winsky. Thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
It was a great exhibit, and I'm so happy that it is here now. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Our Delaware Valley.